Shazami is the latest and best enterprise-grade recruitment website technology globally, and is fully integrated into your ATS. There are no lock-in contracts, as we believe constantly high service levels and cutting-edge, easy-to-use technology should make you never want to leave. Recruitment website success equals Shazami. Visit shazami.com for more information.
What great ideas are so close within your grasp? Seeing other points of view, anticipating change, considering multiple possible turnouts, acknowledging uncertainty, searching for compromise. We're going to talk about how to get over those limiters of innovation so that you can extract better thinking from yourself and your team. So let's talk about how to win the future.
Welcome to the Marketing Rules podcast from Think in Circles with me, your host, James Whitelock. Building and engaging a community around your brand and business is the goal of many marketeers. But what are the issues you might face and what does success look like? Joining me this week is Lloyd Lobo, author and co-founder at Boast. Lloyd talks me through how he built a community of over 100,000 entrepreneurs and innovators and how he managed that community and kept it engaged. Welcome back, everybody, to the Marketing Rules podcast. And it's my pleasure to welcome on board Lloyd Lobo. Lloyd, I'm going to guess that maybe our kind of audience is in the UK. Some of them might not necessarily have kind of heard of you. I know of you a little bit because you reached out to me wanting to kind of be on, and I wanted to try and get you on for a while because I had a look at your background and it's fascinating. The stuff you've kind of done, it sounds great, but maybe it's best coming from you. So if maybe you can give us a little bit about your background and what you do now.
Definitely. So I'm an entrepreneur, accidental entrepreneur, I guess. And, immigrant turned entrepreneur, or rather Gulf War refugee turned entrepreneur, and bootstrapped a couple companies. One is Traction, a large community of 120,000 people. And then Boast AI, which is a fintech platform that automates access to R&D and innovation funding from the government. And recently sold a majority stake in that company with my co-founder. And as a function of bootstrapping it, we had owned 100%. So we sold 52-some-odd%, transitioned to the board. And I moved to Dubai to chill and explore a different way of life and work, right? All of our time in the West is spent chasing. So San Francisco was home base. Mm-hmm. Work about work, pick, drop kids, grocery shop. And when you're not doing that, you're working, commuting or working. And then you just have enough energy to maybe have one nice dinner or social activity a weekend and then 2 weeks off a year kind of thing. But all our life, we chase success looking for happiness. And when I left the day-to-day of the company, I realized, man, I lost my identity. I spent all my life chasing success and put family, relationships, everything on the back burner. And now here I am for the first time. I have some money, but I lost my tribe. And it's a function of just, doing the chase, being in the ecosystems we are. So we decided to eject, move to a different place where people think about work and life differently. And when I came on all this free time, I said, hey, what do I do with my life, right? And as I started to reflect back, I found that, all my life I had no money. I was born in Kuwait. My parents are from India. My dad was a farmer in India. My mom grew up in the slums of Mumbai. And as a function of that, when they went to work in Kuwait, make some money because they weren't educated to go out west. Every summer of mine was spent in the slums of Mumbai. That was my summer vacation because that's the only place we could afford to go, where watching TV was communal. Going to the restroom was communal because there's no restroom in the house. And puddles would turn to ponds and we'd be swimming there. And I just didn't want to leave, man, at the end of the summer. Fast forward a few years, I experienced the greatest marvel in my life. I experienced how the power of people can come together to evacuate a country to safety, right? Kuwait was hit by the Gulf War. Security had lapsed. No internet, no phone. And the people came together and every building turned into a sub-community that coordinated with the next building coordinated with governments and evacuated the people to safety. And so fast forward a few more years, I ended up in Canada, finished engineering, worked at a series of startups, first in cold calling, and then in sales and running sales, and then built my own startup. But it was all being a part of the startup community, the tech community. And so for the first time in my life, when I came into actually money, I realized that, man, I've lost my tribe, my identity. And then what brought me back to good mental health and sanity was also good people, healthy, fit people, a fitness community. And I said, now I'm sitting on all this time. What should I do with it? So I decided to write a book on community-led growth, 13 rules to build iconic brands with the power of people-to-people connection.
It's interesting because there's obviously this theme of community running through all of the things that you've kind of done. And you can see where that initially came from those communities that you were either forced into or that you kind of spent your summers with. And then that has seemed to have played a theme throughout your kind of career. And then obviously onto the book as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Right. I think, you know, what's really interesting over my journey I found is that it's very important to be in love with the audience you're creating for, you're building for, because building a company, building a community, building anything that's worth doing or sharing is a long slog. It's a marathon of the heart and mind. And if you don't love your audience, you can't sustainably create, right? I mean, have you ever been in a situation where you had to do something for an audience you absolutely hated or didn't draw joy from? How long did that last?
Yeah. I mean, I've been there. I think we've all done that at some point. I saw a kind of bit gregarious and I mean, it's not much fun, right? You don't enjoy it. It isn't much fun. You don't really want to be there. You just, it isn't an enjoyable experience, right? Kind of when you're not in love with that community that you're trying to engage with.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But obviously you kind of turned that pretty much into a business though, right? Because you were able to do something that a lot of businesses kind of want to do. And probably there's a certain amount of being afraid of being able to do it. Where do you start? Is you built a community and you were able to monetize that, right? You were able to kind of use that for lead generation, for growth of the business and that kind of thing. So let's kind of start right at the beginning, right? So where did the idea of like building this community that you've kind of got come from? Why did that, you know, what was the drivers behind that in the first place?
You know, what's really interesting, and I just want to peel the onion back on my experience and my nurture. A lot of what we become is nurture. The average of the companions we surround ourselves with versus the talents we're born with. So what's really interesting is, like I said, all my life I was surrounded by communal living, by, you know, either the summers in the slums or the Gulf War. So when we ended up in Canada, I got into engineering and I finished engineering, but I didn't want to do a 9-to-5 job, man. And I always found myself on the other side of risk here. I was a rebellious kid. So I didn't end up finishing high schools. I didn't do my A-levels, right? I went to a Brit school and didn't finish my A-levels. I just missed every exam. So I didn't have a high school diploma. Now we immigrate to Canada. Most kids, you know, if they didn't finish high school, they won't apply to any university, right? Now I tell people luck and risk are two sides of the same coin. The ones that get lucky are the ones that don't stop flipping. And so I applied to every single university. Luck would have it, one university asked me to do their entrance exams in Canada. I said, hey, there's political unrest in Kuwait. They let me do the entrance exam, said your scores were good, your last year's transcripts were good, we'll let you start the semester. But if you don't produce the transcripts by the end of the month, you'll have to unenroll. But they never followed up. So I graduated this engineering degree. Now I've always been on the cusp of this luck and risk, right? Like always playing my odds here, doing things that are risky. And so I graduated engineering. I genuinely didn't want to do a 9-to-5 job. So I asked somebody, what's the best skill I could learn if I want to go into business someday? And they said, hey, you kind of suck at communication in a nice way, right? You're an engineer. You need to improve your communication skill. Everything you do as a business person, from convincing your spouse that you're not going to bring money, to convincing early customers when you have no product, to convincing early employees when you can't afford to pay them. And later on, as you scale the company, you have to convince the world, and that's all communication. Now, I knew self-motivation was very hard for me because if I went on stage and somebody laughed me off stage, I wouldn't be able to go and public speak again. So I said, how do I put myself in a situation that forces me to do communication day in, day out? So I started applying to sales jobs, right? If you suck at something, put yourself in an environment that forces you to do that something over and over again. The system eats motivation for breakfast. So I started applying for sales jobs, and luck would have it, nobody would give me a sales job, not Xerox, not any tech company, but a startup founder needed cold callers, and he gave me a job in cold calling. I took that, I jumped at the opportunity. First call, maybe I practiced 4 hours. As soon as the decision maker hopped on, I hung up. And, you know, everyone laughed, obviously, but I had to make the bills. And so I continued. I got really good at communication. From there, my next job was in sales for another company. Again, because I had only worked for a founder, so the next job, no big company would hire me. I went on to work for another founder. And from there, I worked for another founder as a head of sales and marketing. And so it was this natural progression, right? Like you become the average of the five people you surround yourself with. All my jobs were mostly with founders. So when my best friend from university called me to do both together, I jumped at the opportunity because I'm like, I've hit the ceiling here. All these companies are venture-backed, but none of them worked out or they're not going anywhere. At least we can roll the dice on our own destiny kind of thing. So I moved into his spare bedroom in his apartment. And what Bose does is, you know, you're familiar probably in the UK, they have R&D tax credits, but globally hundreds of billions of dollars are given by governments to fund businesses that build new tech or products or improve existing tech or products. But it's a cumbersome, broken, manual process prone to frustrating audits, and it takes a long time to get the money. So we said, we'll automate this. Now, obviously, you know, the first thing you attempt to do is your immediate experience. What you end up doing sometimes in tough times, right, is your muscle memory. So I would say community was my muscle memory. Calling and doing sales were something I was so used to over the last 5-6 years. Yeah. So the first thing I did was I picked up the phone and started dialing for dollars, calling manufacturing, oil and gas, construction companies, because they were the stable companies, and emailing them. And look at the message, right? Hey, give us your data, your R&D, your technical data, and we'll give you money from the government. No interest, no equity. Sounds like a scam. And even if it doesn't sound like a scam, they're like, I'm working with a big four accounting firm. Why should I use you? Two guys I haven't heard of. So dejected then, you know, the cold calling wasn't working. Obviously, my experience for the last 5-6 years literally rendered useless. So I started hitting... Me and Alex started hitting the events of these companies, right? Manufacturing, oil and gas, construction, and just couldn't resonate. Like, we looked like two guys who threw on a suit jacket on top of a hoodie, and they were like the Cigars Club. We just couldn't feel the connection and the camaraderie. So super dejected, we start storming the startup events because they're like, something to do here, right? Like, let's go to startup events. We felt an instant connection, man. We felt like we found our tribe. Quickly, not only we found the camaraderie, but we started hanging out with them, doing lunches, dinners with them. We were building our company. They were building theirs. They became friends. We started partying together. We started hanging out together, participating in hackathons together, hosting events with them. So we really, really got embedded with them. And so now I want to, you know, suggest the framework that came out of this, because when you're in the thick of things, James, it feels like you're throwing spaghetti on the wall. When you found some success, then you can pull out the framework. So now you want to build a community, right, James? Where do you start? Let's say you're at ground zero. You don't even know who you want to target. A lot of people come and ask me, I want to start a community. Do I start a Slack group or a Discord group? And that's like saying, I want to build a church, but I don't know what religion I belong to. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right? Or people come and tell me, when can I monetize? I want to start a community. That's like saying, I walk into the bar, I'm going to meet the first person I see, and I'm going to get on my knee and throw on a ring on their finger and ask them to marry me. No, you optimize for the conversation and the number and the next text and the next text and the date, right? And that's how it goes. And so the journey of anything is visibility, credibility, and then profitability. Keep adding value. Do a value exchange a number of times, and then it'll turn into a profitable relationship. Most people are not patient. And so I tell them, if you want instant gratification, do direct response, right? Yep. Do direct response. Don't do community. It's a long haul. But nonetheless, so the framework there was, hey, I don't have a target market. Where do I start? Knowing now what the pain we went through was this. One, do you have a passion for this audience? If you don't have the passion, you will never sustainably create, especially if you hate your audience. Second thing is it a small but growing niche? Startup market that we were targeting in 2012 was a small niche, but it exploded. It grew. The third is there a propensity to pay? If people can't pay you, this will never turn into a business. And the fourth one, is there an ease of access? Ease of access is key. You may love the niche and they may have lots of money, but maybe it's like targeting doctors in a hospital and you can't get a hold of them. What's the point? You won't get it off the ground. The second step is then figure out this underserved niche now, figure out where they eat, breathe, drink, sleep, their titles, where they hang out, what are their goals and problems. But goals and problems are sometimes short-term, right? You may have a problem today, it's not a problem tomorrow. Figure out their long-term aspirations and what stands in the way. So James, I don't know if have you ever seen this graphic where Mario eats a mushroom and turns into Super Mario? And they say that, you know, the mushroom is not your product. Your product is Super Mario. Customers want an outcome. Sell to the aspiration. So once you figure out their aspirations and you've nailed that ICP, then write the three Fs around them. One is, who do they follow? This will give you a list of influencers you can interview for your podcast, invite the speakers for your events, etc. The next one is, who do they fund? Meaning what services and tools they pay for. This will give you a potential list of partners, right? Partners that you can co-host events with, invite as sponsors. And then the last one is, what do they frequent? Meaning what events, magazines, blogs they read, what platforms are they prevalent on? This will give you a couple of things. One is, it'll give you the primary place you can start creating content on to build an audience. It'll also give you some collaboration partners. Like for our community now, every year we host a big conference. TechCrunch and Forbes come every year to interview the speakers. I don't do those interviews. And as a function of TechCrunch being there, it gives us massive social proof. So now you've figured out this ideal customer profile, the underserved niche, their pains, and the circle of influence. The next step is figure out the kind of community you want to build. There's three kinds of communities. One is a community of practice where you come together to learn about a specific skill or a craft. That's what we were doing. Although our company was called Boast, we didn't call our community Boast. We called it Traction. And I'll tell you why. The second kind of community you can build is a community of product where people come to learn about your product, build on your product, evangelize your product, build their businesses on top of your product, like an Atlassian or a Microsoft or a GitLab. The thing is, if you have no customers, if you're in a product that has product market fit, or you're not a product that people need to use every day, it's not part of their daily workflow, don't build a community of product. Because if you do that, people will think you're running a timeshare presentation and not a community. They're going to think they're going to be sold to, right? Imagine, when was the last time like you get invited to some event and you've never even heard of this product and they're running a product presentation, like it's a product community. You're not going to go.
No. And why would you? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So the community of practice is one where we started. Now, the last one is a community of play where you bring people together to learn about something, like to have fun together. So community of play, coming together to have fun, like the Harley Davidson community, Writers Club, or Nike's Running Club, or Red Bull. They have a lot of fun events and activities, and their product is in the background. So we started a community of practice. Now, we knew that, why do entrepreneurs and founders, as a function of us spending so much time with them, why do they need this government money or money in general to fund their business? Why do they need to fund their business to drive innovation? Why do they need to drive innovation to get traction? So we just called the community Traction. And then once we did that, we knew the customer base. We understood the aspirations. We understood their circle of influence. Now we were clear on the kind of community we wanted to build. Now there's this journey, and I'll tell you very interestingly. As I was interviewing people for the book and researching so many enduring brands, and these are not brands that started in the last 20 years. These are brands that have endured the test of time, 40, 50 years. I found something very interesting. Every obscure idea that eventually went on to become a global, worldwide, enduring phenomena, from Christ to CrossFit, every small idea that exploded for the long haul had these exact four same stages. People listen to you or buy your product. You have an audience. You bring that audience together to interact with one another. It becomes a community. When that community comes together to create impact towards a purpose that's far greater than your product or your profit, it becomes a movement. And when that movement has undying faith in its purpose through sustained rituals, over time, it becomes a cult or a religion. So audience, community, movement, religion. So, you know, we're in 2023. Everyone's creating audiences, influencers on LinkedIn, on Insta. What happens when the algorithm changes? Or some big change happens, some event happens in the influencer's life where they can't create sustainably. They lose the audience. Mm-hmm. So it's key to make that shift from audience to community very quickly. And so then for us, the next two things were, how do I create an audience online? And how do I bring that audience together to create a community? And those two things done sustainably, consistently over years grew us from having no audience, James, to today 120,000 subscribers with folks like the CEO of Uber and the president of Atlassian and Twilio and all these big name folks coming to our events. Our YouTube channel has 3 million views for a very specific B2B content. It's just being consistent. So how did we build the audience? Now, this was 2012. LinkedIn wasn't prevalent at all for content distribution. In 2012, if you recall, even podcasting for business wasn't huge. It was mostly blogs from influencers. And I knew if I created a blog, I had nothing to share. I mean, first time founder-ish, right? The rest was all failures. And the second thing was events. So blogs was happening a lot. A lot of events were happening in 2012. And what I realized is I can't blog myself. I can't like talk about my journey. There's nothing to talk about. So I can curate other people. But if I curate other people on my blog, it'll get no traffic. The SEO is going to be bupkis because it's a brand new blog. So I reached out to the local newspaper and I said, hey, you know, would you give me a column to cover startups? And they said, no, like it's not of interest, right? It's not something we do. So I went to a regional blog and I asked them the same thing and they gave me a blog post. I went and covered two or three startups that weren't getting love in that region. And when I covered their story in that regional blog, of course, the startup founders are going to go and explode it out of the stratosphere. It got hundreds of retweets. Now, I took that blog post and went back to the editor of the newspaper. I'm like, listen, you're losing a demographic that is going to be one of the most important demographics. One, it's a young audience, millennial audience. And two, like the newspaper is losing the younger demographic. So I can bring that to you. Look at how well this blog post did. So he said, you know what? Okay, I can understand what you're saying. It makes sense. But I'm going to give you a blog post. Let's see how it does. Now, my rule always as an entrepreneur and someone who's taking risk is never ask for permission. Always beg for forgiveness unless you're doing something illegal. Like otherwise, you know how much time we spend in our bureaucratic systems just to get permission? It never gets done. And so I'm like, what do I call this blog post that actually becomes a thing? So I called it Startup of the Week in 2012. I covered a founder who was not getting any coverage from any other media. He had raised 3 million. And he made it explode. Family members, friends. I got seen as a messiah in that ecosystem because now it's not Startup of the Week on some obscure blog. It's the national newspaper. And the editor now is calling me. I have like two missed calls from him. I dial him back and I'm like, ah, he's going to be pissed. So I brace myself and he says, Lloyd, if you commit to writing it every week, I will give you a print column. Mm-hmm. Boom. So basically, you know, the key learning here is you can't just take things and put it in the ether like we do a lot of the times, right? We take content, we take products, we just put it out there on platforms and we hope the platform does the distribution for us. The platform never does. You have to seed it. You have to drive your own audience through it. And the best way is to ask people, look at your phone contact list. Who are the people who fit that ICP? Reach out to them. Who are your contacts on LinkedIn? Reach out to them. Who are your contacts on email? Reach out to them and ask them to do you a solid and share it. And it'll drive that traffic. So he saw that traffic. He turned Startup of the Week into a weekly column now. I wrote it for 2.5, almost 3 years, every week, rain or shine. And that exploded our social proof and audience in the early days. But here's what it did. One, it gave me a backlink for our anchor texted keyword from the largest domain authority website in the country, the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And my obscure blog started getting SEO. Number two, we got instant validation, right? Print column, even in 2023, when there are so many blogs, they take you seriously. So we got social proof from our community. Three, the founders started going every Monday at 7 or 8 a.m. to the newspaper stand and taking clippings of it to share it with people and making it go viral. And then the fourth one is we threw a form in there, which you know people don't do enough, is if you want to be in here, apply. And so my database started growing. Now, I could have just rested on that laurel of having this column. But what we did was we took the database that was filling up and we started inviting them to our own events, mm-hmm. right? So the other white space we found, the first white space was no local media was covering founders. The other white space we found was that all the events happening at the time were high-level CEO platitudes, inspirational talks. I'm like, if I quit my job to start a company, I don't need inspiration. I need tactics. Mm-hmm. So we started creating events where, you know, we made this list now, list of influencers, who do they follow, right? And saying, hey, James, join us for pizza at our co-working space. Pizza was $9.99 at the time. And we're going to talk about how to get your first 10 customers or how to launch your first landing page, those kinds of things, very tactical. And the first pizza night, 10 people showed up and we never stopped, kept doing it. And one day, 200 people showed up at the co-working space. And the guys who ran the co-working space are like, you've hijacked the whole thing. This you can't run a makeshift conference for like $20 pizzas, right? And like, you got to get out of here. And that transformed into what Traction is today, 100 plus thousand subscribers, all these big speakers. But as a function of that community growing, James, mm-hmm. our business started growing because we started to get the social proof. We were visible. We were credible. The partners who they funded, we co-hosted events with, they started referring us business. We started getting direct customers. Some of the speakers started becoming clients of ours. And that was the journey how we grew to 10 million in revenue with no marketing team, just doing events. And in fact, the growth equity, private equity firm that bought 50% of the company during the pandemic also came to one of our events and directly that deal happened. So I think, like, you know, I don't like this, your network is your net worth. I like the, your community is your currency, because it's more sort of personal than transactional.
Yeah. Lloyd, that's amazing. Some great tips in there. I'm sure everybody listening is going to kind of rush out and buy the book. All the details will be in the show notes if everybody wants to kind of get it. I thoroughly recommend going out and kind of either getting in contact with Lloyd or reading the book, because if you are looking to building your community, there's no real reason not to kind of to listen to Lloyd and to read the book, because it's all in there. It's his story, his journey, and it's amazing and worth a read. But Lloyd, it has been absolutely great having you on the podcast. Thank you very much, and hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Definitely. Thank you so much, James. This was great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the Marketing Rules podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all other major podcasting platforms. I've been your host, James Whitelock, and I hope you can join me and more amazing guests next time. The Marketing Rules Podcast is a Thinking Circles production.